Our next speaker is Lori Goshen, PhD, RN, talking on correctional health beyond the bars, integrative review of public health nursing with women under community supervision.
Good morning, everyone. I'm excited to be here. I'm excited to be on this panel. And like the prior presenter, I think the two prior presentations really served me up quite well. So I'm here to talk about expanding our idea of correctional health beyond prisons and jails. I have no disclosures to report. So using the last federal data that's available, at any given time in 2011, 1,310,431 women were involved in the criminal justice system at any given time. And those are point estimates, so that's not how many women who are involved on a yearly basis, because as we know, people come in and out and go back, and there's long-term involvement. So unlike what you see in the media and what we even read most commonly in the academic literature, the large percentage, 80% or over, of these women are in community supervision, with smaller percentages of women in prison and jail. So what is community supervision? Community supervision can be probation, parole, with probation being a court-ordered correctional supervision after jail release. It's usually for less severe crimes. And then parole is a conditional supervision after prison release. So you have a prison sentence, and they say, okay, you can get out a little early, but we're still going to watch you. And then there's an emerging movement, and it's been going on for the past, has it been 20 years now almost, of treatment courts, and it's getting louder and louder and louder as there are more and more treatment courts around the country, and that's intensive supervision by a special judge, usually with a treatment team and court-ordered supervision, and there are a number of those models now. There are drug courts, mental health courts, veterans courts, DWI courts, prostitution courts, you name it, there's a new court for it. And so we have great federal-level data on probation and parole. The majority of women are on under community supervision or on probation. And this goes for men, too. And then with fewer women under parole supervision. And as far as I can tell, we have no idea how many people, let alone broken down by gender, are involved in the problem-solving courts. We know how many courts there are, but not necessarily. And you can get, you know, finer data on how many people certain courts process, but how many people on a larger level are being processed every year and supervised in the treatment courts is, if you can find it, that would be great. Please send it to me. So just like my colleague said, this population is a distillation of all the disparities that we see in other settings. So on the left-hand side, you'll see disparities related to criminal justice involved women in general. Allison talked about the disparities in medical, mental health, and substance use disorders for women compared to men in the system and compared to women in the community. These women also have insanely high prevalence of a history of traumatic exposure, both in adulthood and childhood, for many women, about 70%+ of women. Many women have a history of homelessness, and many women, because of institutional issues within corrections, may, you know, come into the system sick and then re-enter the community sicker. And that's not in all cases. Sometimes we can stabilize people, but a lot of times people re-enter sicker than they were when they went in. And so there's some unique health risk to women in under community supervision. And I should say, because of the movement within the system, women under community supervision share a lot of these disparities with women who are in prisons and jails. But they have unique risk. Allison talked about the acute mortality risk in reentry, and there's a lot of really interesting and important work being done in that area right now. They have, of course, ready access to drugs and alcohol. Now, anyone who's worked in corrections is like, yeah, but they've got ready access to that inside, too. But it's not as ready as it is in the community. There's huge problems with unstable housing. There are competing demands. So people aren't locked down, but they are under mandate to get drug testing, drug treatment, get a job, education, go see your probation or parole officer. They still have a lot of competing demands, in addition to the demands for many women to resume family care of the family, so their family responsibilities. And there are a lot of barriers to health and health care in community criminal justice facilities, just like what Allison talked about. So, and then there's the problem of recidivism, which I've touched on a little bit, specifically for women within 3 years of release, which is how the feds usually look at recidivism. 24 to 66% of women are readmitted on any given year. And there's a lot of geographical variation here, and there's a lot of variation whether you're looking at a population of seriously mentally ill women or other kind of subpopulations. And then in jails, up to 70% of women are rearrested within 3 years of release. And again, that higher boundary are mostly when you're looking at populations with serious mental illness. And there are known health risks. So there's a connection between recidivism and health. And that is serious mental illness, drug use, and strained social ties. So when we talk about nursing, or as it's historically been talked about, nursing criminal justice involved patients, you see the prison nurse here. You see, you know, nursing behind the wall, and it's very, you know, police, and there's bars involved, and there's a lot of that, those pictures. And some terms that are used for correctional nursing, so it's correctional nurse, prison nurse, jail nurse, and forensic nurse. So our objectives today were to synthesize the available information on nursing practice in community criminal justice settings and to illustrate some innovative models using two case studies of work that Allison and I have done over the years that has not yet really been reflected well in the published literature. So what we did is we used an integrative review methodology, Whittemore and Knuffel. We used a number of databases with these keywords, and we didn't put any date restrictions on it. We're not talking about the most current medical care here. We wanted to get some idea of nursing practice in these settings. And we also didn't restrict by peer-reviewed. We take all comers that were available. So we're looking at anything that had a nurse author or co-author, used nursing interventions, or where nurses were involved in a multidisciplinary team, looking at the care of people in community settings. And so we excluded anything where the care was strictly in prisons or jails, but did include where nurses were boundary spanners between those settings. And we used a constant comparative method in keeping with Whittemore Knuffel's method. So using those keywords, we found 337 journal articles that popped up. And there are two practice guidelines that we wanted to include, even though they didn't pop up. And then there's a book on corrections nursing out. 119 met the first pass, and we found 25 through ANSTRES researching. And then 49 met full inclusion criteria when we went and reviewed the whole article. So there was looked like there was a lot of work out there, right? Like, wow, this is kind of exciting. Maybe I just didn't know what's going on out there. But what we found was that community corrections and the larger picture, especially as you look at the scopes and standards of correctional nursing in these broader documents, was really not included in corrections nursing. So the ANA describes correctional nursing, or defines it as delivery of health care to individuals, families, communities, and populations under the jurisdiction of the criminal justice system. So we're like, wow, that's really inclusive. But then when you go on, they only describe care in locked settings. And then when you look at the text on correctional nursing takes place in jails, prisons, and juvenile detention settings. And the authors go on to say that people under community criminal justice supervision are in the community, so they can get community care. And just like a lot of the literature in the area of criminal justice and correctional health in general, a lot of this work has been situated in mental health. That's a huge focus of criminal justice. So most of the literature was in mental health care, nurses involved in treatment court teams, outpatient monitoring teams, ACT teams, inpatient facilities that are used as alternatives, as a part of multisystemic treatment for sex offenders, which is very interesting. There's a nurse think she's in the South, that's been doing a lot of work in that area, and services to offenders with intellectual disabilities. So these certain subpopulations of SMI groups. There's a lot of work out there on advanced practice nurses doing primary care in treatment court settings, and that's been really interesting, the integration there, nurses as a part of treatment court teams, but specifically to provide primary care, just like the prior presenter said, bringing the care to where people are. And then there's infectious disease. That's been a huge push. There's a lot of funding over the last number of years to look at infectious diseases within the criminal justice system, with the work that's been done on how many people come in and out of the system with HIV, hepatitis B and C, and TB. So there was literature out there on nurses who are managing HIV in drug treatment settings, nurses who are providing risk reduction education, and there was information that nurses provide a good percentage of their risk reduction education, at least in one large study, for parolees. And hepatitis vaccination programs as well, specifically targeted at people who are recently released. And then there was a smattering of other things, people in research partnerships like Allison and I, people who do case management and care coordination across settings, those kind of boundary-spanning people, reproductive health and the use of midwifery in specifically programs specifically for childbearing women who are under supervision, nurses who work in the child welfare system and specifically work in dependency courts. But the interesting thing here is the nurses were working specifically with the children, and then the treatment court team were working with the women and did not include a nurse. And it appeared that the nurses weren't communicating with the families, and that was actually a problem that was identified. So this was a little bit more tangential. And then there's a reference where said a nurse was on the team, have no idea what that person did, but they're on the team. So we certainly wanted to document that too, that we're out there, don't know what we're doing, but we're doing something, assuming it's good, of course. And there are a lot of challenges here, of course. So, and a lot of the challenges are similar to what nurses see in the locked setting. So again, it speaks to the fact that this work fits within the specialty of correctional nursing. That contradiction between therapeutic, legal, and security roles, the level of involvement in providing evidence. So in the case of drug courts, a huge thing in drug court is you got to get urine toxicologies like all the time. And do the nurses on the team, are they involved in the urinalysis? And when nurses are on a treatment team for treatment court, do they provide evidence to the judge that determines the person's sanction and their mandate? And there was some discussion about the approach to that. Confidentiality issues, similarly. And the feeling of losing the nursing orientation, and my colleague and I were just talking about that earlier, how hard it is to work in corrections. So nurses working in the community in corrections also had those express those sentiments. And then a lack of education on the interface with the criminal justice system. So you have your nursing disciplinary background, but you're interacting with all these very powerful forces with very little education on how to do so, to maintain your discipline in nursing, to protect your patients, to advocate for them in the best possible way. There's just a lot going on here. So very similar to what has been put in the literature for locked settings. And a really sparse research base to on which to base our practice. So there's very limited descriptive work available. A lot of the work that we drew from were just people talking about existing programs or recommendations, kind of the shoulda, coulda, woulda kind of literature, and then a lot of talk about people's needs. And then, you know, well, I don't. What should we do about it? And there's a gap here in research on a larger systematic public health nursing response. So a lot of the work was very, you know, taking care of is at the individual level of care and not a larger response to care. And then intervention research is so nascent, and that's why Allison's work is really, really important. There's a lack of translation of established interventions that might work in this population, so we don't have to like reinvent the wheel, but certainly can tailor interventions for community criminal justice, and there's not evidence that people are doing that. And despite people talking about the gender-specific needs of women in community criminal justice settings, there is a lack of acknowledgement of that. So they'll acknowledge the need, and then the programs don't necessarily seem to acknowledge it. And there's a real focus on mental health with the exclusion of other issues like chronic illnesses and the things that Allison was talking about, and then a lack of a family orientation. So we have so little time to talk about the case studies that we wanted to talk about, but I think Allison should end it up and talk about her intervention.
What we want to do is just give you some examples of what people are doing. The idea, again, that when we think about intervention, is there's a lot of existing well-tested intervention about how to engage people, how to think about healthcare, how to think about those things, and we need to focus on translating that in a way that makes sense for the population that we are seeking to serve. So this program here and the intervention here is about living with a chronic illness, what that looks like, how to manage it, very typical ways that we understand. But what we have to do is find people who can talk about what that means. So when you live in a community corrections facility, you're under community supervision, issues about food and nutrition are a totally different deal, right? I mean, it's just what you have access to and how you make decisions and what that looks like and how you spend your money are entirely different conversations. And so this is one example of a way that we think about translation and what it looks like and tailoring it to fit a particular need. As a community, we understand the issues about reentry. You know, we do. Second chance money, things about that. We intuitively understand that reentry is an important time. How we do that needs to kind of catch up with this philosophical understanding of what it is. And I don't think anybody in this room would disagree that we need to talk about mental and physical health. Physical health being a big part of that as well. But how we're going to do that has to be the next step. And that's sort of what our interventions focus on. If anybody's interested in learning more about this program, again, it's, you know, tailoring, addressing. We tested the intervention. We're learning now about how engaged women were with it, and hopefully we'll have some results on the intervention testing in general.
So see you in New Orleans for that, for sure. So I have so little time, but I want to talk about my own work, which has been with women around their parenting, specifically in co-residential settings that allow women to remain with their kids, so women with felony-level crimes to remain with their kids. And this is a supportive housing building in Brooklyn, New York, where women with felony-level crimes, some of them with violent felony crimes, are allowed to live in an unlocked community supportive housing setting. And looking at how those outcomes from the perspective of the women and the children and their relationships, and then working on integrating intervention, because what we found is the programs focus on keeping women and children together, and they think, wow, that's really revolutionary, and we are going to stop there and just let nature, you know, take its course. And with the number of concerns that families come into the criminal justice system with, they need more specifically in the areas of relational support. In summation, that promoting and protecting the health of criminal justice-involved populations is going to require a coordinated public health nursing response. We're very important here. I forgot to say that the correctional nursing in general is very nurse-driven, and we need to continue to lead in that area. We need to clarify these subpopulations and their needs, parole, probation, and the treatment court population, and identify the unique needs and the strengths and the expectations and how we can integrate interventions into those settings and explore the fit within our larger healthcare system and how that interacts, and then the larger criminal justice system, especially as the exciting reform movements that are going on now. And that's certainly going to involve interdisciplinary, collaborative, and intervention research. So thank you so much.